from the Star Conspiracy and the content channel, Hey Brett Star. I'm Brett Star. This is Long Strange Trip, Episode 9.
My name is Zohib Walyani. I am a Pakistani-American. I was born in Bedford, Texas, so not too far away at all. And, kind of lived around the world. I mean, not around the world, but around the country a little bit. Atlanta, San Diego, back to Texas. Just kind of grew up kind of not knowing where I fit in. And I think at a certain point, like, creativity was where I wanted to be, because I could make my own world. It's kind of that control of like being able to know that you can fit in where you build the world or where you build your surroundings. And that's kind of how I came into, advertising in the creative field. And so at the Star Conspiracy, I'm a creative. So kind of translates to like a senior art director or something like that.
Most people wouldn't know it, but we don't have the same like departmental structures or org structures that a lot of organizations have. We have mostly flat teams with, people who are capable of doing a lot of different things, but the creative group is definitely a force unto itself. And so there's a lot of power there, up and down, side to side. Well, you're part of a unique group of people who joined us during the pandemic. And, have been growing a lot and hiring a lot of folks. You're one of the first people that we hired when we started to grow. But your experience is probably pretty different than, the 40 or something people who have, we've worked together for 7 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years in some cases. And I'm really excited about getting your perspective today. I've got a crazy question for you. At what point did you realize the pandemic was going to change everything?
It's funny because if it wasn't for my wife, I think I wouldn't be as informed at times, because I don't watch the news as like closely as she does. It's like something she grew up doing. And so like, I think February, in December, she had started talking about like Wuhan and everything that was going on there. And she's like, it's concerning. Oh, wow. And we don't know what that means. Yeah. Yeah.
So that was December 2019, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. December 2019. And she's like, we don't know what's going to happen, but that's just something that's coming up. And then, February, she was like, oh no, this is going to be bad. And, it was just kind of like this weird thing that, they're like, yeah, you start to think about like, it's going to change our lives. Like, but like how long? Right.
Yeah.
Cause we've never experienced that. At least, like us, right now humans have, but that's different.
Yeah. At what moment did it really hit home for you? Like, I remember, I was on spring break, when it hit home for me, that I was in San Francisco and that, cruise ship was, stuck, there. No one would let it, dock, anywhere. And I was like, holy cow, we need to get home as quickly as possible. And then I came home and tried to go to the grocery store, and the line was like, 2 hours to get through checkout and all that stuff. And that's when I was like, oh, this is something, crazy and different. And, when I really, to be blunt, really started paying attention to it. In a significant way. But do you remember a moment when it really hit home for you?
I do remember one day. I think it was probably that weekend or the Monday after, kind of Friday the 13th, right? In March 2020, when like at least our area, I told my boss before, I wasn't working here, so I was working at another organization, and I remember telling my boss like, hey, I'm kind of like a high risk, and I know that we're not kind of like really worrying about this right now internally as a company, but I'm going to need to take my work home, and I'm going to have to work there for, indefinite amount of time. It was like probably like 16th or something like that I was like, I started working from home, and And I kind of never went back.
Yeah. When you think about, you know, the pandemic and your experience and when it hit home for you and everything, how has it changed your, if it has, how has it changed your outlook on life or your plans or goals for the future?
Yeah, you know, thinking about, like, it's changed everything in a lot of ways, in, like, perspective, right? Because I've always been one of those people that thinks about, like, how do things affect other people? And maybe that's because, you know, self-consciousness and, like, kind of all that. But I started thinking about how, like, I realized that privileges kind of became more heightened and more distinguishable between people. Cause you start to see certain communities being more cautious, and other communities being like, well, I'm not doing this because it's not, I don't need to, I've never had to, it's just the flu. And you start to realize that these interactions you're having with people, whether that's online, in person, or what have you, you start to realize people are, as a whole, have become more kind of grounded in what their perspective is rather than trying to understand why. I think that was a tough thing to kind of really swallow, is that it's going to be hard to communicate with people. I think that was happening already. It's been happening for probably decades. But it was kind of that thing that kind of shifted for me about how, like, I mean, just wondering, like, where do I fit again? Like, kind of that question of, like, where do I fit in this world now? Right. So I have type 1 diabetes. I've had it for about 11 years now, 11 ish. So it was kind of a struggle for me, right? Like, figuring out, like, okay, I'm at higher risk. And what does that mean? You know, and until a vaccine comes out, you know, in 2020, it's like, until a vaccine comes out, I'm wearing masks. I'm staying away from people. We, you know, we distance from, like, my parents. Like, it was kind of a bizarre thing to think about, right? Like, you don't think that, oh, it's just, I just want to see my parents or, you know, my sister or my wife's family. But it's like, some folks have to go into work. And because of that, just as simple as that, like, just needing to pay bills, like, there's like this just shock of, like, oh, okay, so we're changing the way we are, but maybe if we all come together, we'll be okay. And initially, you know, you saw that. I mean, yeah, there are people that kind of didn't agree with it to the full extent, but they were like, yeah, let's come together. We're all in this together. But there's that. But very soon after, you got that waning, like, okay, I'm tired of this. This is not interesting anymore. It's not exciting anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people talk about it in terms of, like, it was and has been a period of the greatest, like, self-actualization that a lot of people have had. You know, they learned a lot about themselves, what they care about, where they belong, you know, the people they belong with, you know, et cetera. But at the same time, there was this gulf that just widened between people who have different perspectives. And so it seems like, you know, we talked a lot about this throughout the pandemic and have talked about it. But, you know, the burden of dealing with the pandemic was unevenly distributed to different groups of people. And, you know, based on everyone's, you know, specific personal unique perspectives and the amount of disruption or pain that they experienced because of the pandemic was really different. And, you know, I don't want to be pessimistic about it, but at the same time that a lot of people have said, I've learned a lot more about myself, you know, the next thing they say is, and I know that I don't want to hang out with those people.
Sure.
It seems to have driven people a little bit further apart.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting about that, right? Like, I think there's a balance, right? Like, I know that people say this a lot of, like, I'm not pessimistic, I'm realistic. But I think in this kind of way, right, there is some of that truth of, like, that there's a realistic perspective of saying, like, if we're going to spend our time, which is both long and short, on, you know, on this planet, how do I want to, how, and it's a self, kind of a selfish way too, right? How do I want to spend that time? Who do I want to be around? And what's going to provide me value, but also who can I provide value to? And who, because at some point, like, yeah, you could spend your time trying to argue with people all day long. And there's sometimes a value to it, but also there's this need to this self-care, right? Self-care has been a big deal over the past, you know, at least 5 years. Really, it really kind of came up in a big way in 2016. And from there, you know, you start to think about like, what is self-care versus what, you know, what is like actually helping bring people together. And at a certain point, you're never going to be able to help everyone come together, but you start to realize like, what do you need to make sure you can continue to bring a more positive outlook to people, at least the people around you or the people you want to be with. And, whether that's your family or friends, cause there's also family, like you said, like people have said, like, I can't, like my family, I can't deal with anymore. Yeah. You know,
families have been broken apart, you know, communities, friends, have been broken apart, and a lot of people have come together in really significant ways around shared values at the same time. But, you know, it's not the response that I would have expected, I guess, if we all felt like we were facing a common, you know, kind of challenge or enemy.
Sure.
It's just really interesting to see, which is understating it, but it's really interesting to see everyone's different approaches, how they react to it.
Go
ahead.
I was just going to say, I think there's the one thing that, and I'm going to try to, I don't want to be too careful, but I also want to just, you know, I think that there was a politicization of reaction, and I think that's unfortunate, but it's really the reality of like what was beneficial to groups of people. And then that was kind of like, that's because it's become this, it's become this identity politics thing, and science is not about politics. It's not the way we implement it can be sometimes, but the raw data, the raw conclusions are not. And when you start to allow political figures kind of not even reinterpret, but like completely dismiss and kind of redirect or give an alternative perspective on what without any base of data, like that becomes kind of like difficult, and people start to dig their heels in even more, and then it just becomes an identity, which is disappointing, but it's true.
Well, I mean, it saves people the trouble of thinking sometimes. You know, it's like, this is my identity. This is the group I identify with, and this is the way I feel about that issue. And it saves me a lot of time from actually having to research it myself, you know.
Exactly.
These are people that I trust, and if they feel that way, then, you know, that's the way I should feel.
Yeah.
You don't have to be careful. What would you have liked to have seen happen as opposed to the way that you saw it unfold?
I think, you know, what I would have liked to have seen is more focus on everyone making sacrifices rather than putting people who are essential workers or people who are, immunocompromised. And then I don't identify as someone who's immunocompromised, though I have heightened risk factors that, can make, especially initially, unvaccinated COVID-19 a very, difficult situation and could be fatal. Right. But the burden was on healthcare workers, which to some degree is understandable, right? Because that's like in the battle of COVID-19, that's what the front line was. But beyond that is the selfishness of like, well, I'm tired of wearing a mask or staying indoors. And it was always people who could just work from home that were, or not always, but it was majority of people who could work from home. Right. And I think that there's a point to where this was a war, just not a human enemy directly, like maybe indirectly, but not directly. It was against a virus that we've seen in history, like a pandemic lasts around like about 4 years or something like that. It's like a roller coaster, and to a degree, like I don't think the human race in modern times has seen a virus like this, which is why it was so scary. But putting money to people who really needed the help, I think it was too little and too late. And this gets a little bit more toward the political side of things, but we also saw people couldn't, like, there are people who were immunocompromised or high risk that had to go into work because their jobs don't offer healthcare. They don't offer PTO properly or any sort of like assistance to their employees. So they had to go into work. I know people had to go into work, and, you know, being 65 years old is not the same as being 33.
What has changed, if anything, about just how you view work or your relationship with work? You know, work used to be this thing that, you know, was so separate and from, you know, our personal lives, and loomed very large. You know, it was the source of our economic opportunity. It, you know, drove so many other opportunities in our lives. But so many things happened to, you know, kind of the relationship between work and life. How has it changed your perspective on, you know, work and how that fits into the rest of what's going on in your life?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, right? And I say that more like in a peculiar way and maybe a little bit more of a facetious way, where like I was always asking, you know, previously, you know, my manager, in a different job before the Star Conspiracy, was like, and years ago, I was like, why can't we work from home sometimes? Like there were moments where like, yeah, you know, I'm having car trouble. Can I just work from home today? Sure, that's not a problem. But when it came to it, it was this thing where we can't work from home because we need to be in the eye of other business units. They need to be able to communicate with us, but we also need to prove our worth. And it was interesting because the way that company was structured was our team was like completely structured around getting money from other business units. And it was a really frustrating thing because the truth is that you start to see this capitalistic like mentality within an organization in and of itself, right? Like this, I'm not giving you mine. It's mine. You have to prove why I should give you a cut of it. And it was like, if we don't show our faces, they don't know we're doing the work. And my thing was always like, but we are doing the work and we are communicating with people daily. But then beyond all of that, the idea of work was you keep your head down when things are bad and you do the work and you don't argue. And one of the biggest jumping points, so I will fully admit that I was at, you know, an organization for like about nearly a decade, and my growth financially, career wise, it was the only growth I really truly experienced was personally going and building and developing skills myself, whether that was within the work, you know, within the side of actually doing work, for my job, or if it was personal. But I didn't feel any growth. And at that point, you know, I tried a few times to kind of find other jobs, but it was difficult, right? It was a difficult situation, especially with being a creative. Your portfolio is everything. And if they don't feel like your portfolio is like, if it's not up to standard, or if you just don't have agency experience, a lot of times it's like, you're not going to get hired. I had a little bit of agency experience, but a chunk of it was in house. But essentially that takes, you know, that took a toll on me. And I was like, I don't want to be here. I don't feel valued. And I had a conversation to try to get a raise. And that was during 2020. Cause I was looking for a job and it didn't happen. And then 2020, you know, the pandemic and everything. And I was like, well, if I'm here for a little bit, cause I don't know, I can't just jump like that because it is a bit more concerning. Especially like at that point, like healthcare, I need healthcare. So the raise didn't happen. They're like, oh, we're in a holding pattern. And so I was like, okay, you know, I was angry and I was like, I don't feel valued. Not that I expect to feel valued in an organization where, you know, it's like kind of that traditional, you do the work, we pay you, and you should be grateful for what we pay you. And you start to realize like it's an old mentality that you don't really agree with anymore. I never really agreed with it, but.
Were you ever afraid of losing your job as we kind of went through the pandemic?
In terms of like my previous, or is it a previous job or like this one?
With the Star Conspiracy.
With the Star Conspiracy. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think what's interesting is my wife and I talk about this a lot, is like the Sunday, cause I start on a Monday. I know we now start people on Thursdays, but I start on a Monday, and that Sunday, the day before, I was terrified. Like my anxiety was at an all time high. I was like, I am joining an agency. I have not worked at an agency in about 8+ years. I don't know. Like there are, you know, like they're talking about time tracking and there's like, there are about only 40 people or so. And like, there's just all these different, you know, things that like, I don't know if I'm cut out for it. You know, I'm concerned. And then, you know, I talked to Dan and like, you know, in the first week goes through, I'm like, okay, I feel a little better. Everyone's really cool, but it's still this, like, I don't know if I have the chops for it. And what's so funny is like, now I don't think I'm really worried about losing my job. I think I'm just like, I just need to learn to balance life a little better, you know? Yeah. But that's because I feel more accountability here. And I feel like there is a like people clearly put value on each other more than like even the idea of like, oh, well, we have to sell to this client and you have to do the job and that's about it.
What do you think we got wrong? You know, I feel like we made a lot of mistakes, have made a lot of mistakes through the pandemic and continue to make mistakes. But what do you think the things are that we did wrong?
So to be completely honest, like the only, and I don't know if it's necessarily the thing that has been gotten wrong necessarily. I think the only hesitation or the concern I ever had was, and some of that has to do with the experience of like being who I am, is like around vaccines and like going into the office. And I think there's a concern there that like the like not having that requirement gives me pause, because I've only gone to the office once. Yeah. And that was at a time where I was like really like debating, right? Because my wife is pregnant, so we're already concerned about all that, you know, all the other stuff, which is, you know, her being pregnant and all that. But then on top of that, having type 1 diabetes, and like even though I'm vaccinated, Omicron sort coming up, and all these factors of like, I can't go into the office because I don't know who is vaccinated, right? And I'm not going to ask, and that's not a requirement to ask anyone, right? But then that's like, and you start to realize like some people are feeling comfortable doing that, and that's great. But also like those who, and like I'd gotten a response, which kind of, it wasn't intentionally like trying to make someone feel bad or make me feel bad. And I don't think, I didn't take it wrong, but it didn't make me feel like the response was, well, we don't require anyone to come into the office.
Yeah.
And I totally get that. And I know not everyone can go into the office because they may not live nearby, but for someone who lives only about 40 minutes away, the opportunity to just like kind of, you know, bond and kind of like have that team building just by being around is kind of like keeps me away. It kind of keeps me further away just because of the fact that like, I can't be sure I'm safe because of that.
What would you like this to have done?
I think it's just the policy that like requiring, you know, vaccines, like full vaccines for the pandemic during like, you know, at the time that we need, right? Like, I mean, we see in up until like, you know, a couple of weeks ago, New York was requiring vaccines again.
I wish we had just gotten some air cover from local government or you know, state government or federal government to where, you know, it wasn't even a question, but since it was a question and since it was one that was so divisive, it was just, you know, it was a really tough one to make. And I think you're right. You know, our answer was, well, you know, if you're not comfortable with us not having a vaccine, you know, kind of policy, then you can always work from home.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's going to be a bell curve of sentiment and, you know, some portion of people are going to find that a very dissatisfying option because it's not very inclusive of people who want to be in the office, but also want to be, you know, feel, you know, safe, in the office. But man, I don't even know how I'd go back in time and address that, knowing what I know now, or how I'd address it in the future, because it is so divisive.
Yeah. I think one thing that I kind of think about, right, is when we talk about community, you know, whether that's inside the organization or outside, right, we think about, well, you know, the sentiment of like if we look at risk factors as a whole, we start to look at there are higher risk factors in different communities, and those demographics usually tend to be people of color. And so when that comes about, you start to think about, well, if we're looking at, for example, like if you have money, you can do something. Well, more likely the people who have money are not going to be people of color, unless certain groups are, you know, and there's a pecking order. There's always a pecking order. Yeah. It's not always like it shifts based on, what question you're asking or what category you're talking about. Right. But that is something that does stick out to me as like, if we talk about risk factors and how those things, that is inherently discriminative, and not directly because it's a choice to like be discriminative, but it's not the intention, but is the effect. And sometimes intention doesn't always like override effect or like excuse effect. And I'm not saying that this one is necessarily the case, but that gave me pause, I'll be honest. Like, and not to be honest, like when you're told like, hey, you know, there's this company, they're hiring, do you want to check them out? I'm like, yeah, you know, you go to their website, you go to their about us page. A lot of people, depending on who you are, you'll check out their work or whatever. I'm like, I go to the about page. Who are these people? Mm-hmm. You know, I look them up and I start to see like who are the folks and like what's the leadership look like. And I was referred, and I told the person that referred me, I was like, this company's really white.
Really white.
Yeah. I was like, he was like, they're great people. I was like, I trust you on that. I'm just saying like, there's that thing for me that's like, can I communicate and can I be related? Can I communicate in a way that people will understand what I'm saying? Because if there is tension, coming on as someone who's new, who is at the time, you know, definitely one of the few people of color there. And like the percentages are, you know, very, very marginal. Right. At that time, how do you know, I can't relate. Right. Like I came from an organization where at least my team of four people had a pretty decent coverage of like, you know, like a black man, you know, a white man, and then an English woman, and then me, you know, a brown man. And while it's not the most diverse, but it was, I could communicate, and everyone had the understanding of like recognizing what systemic racism meant. Right. And that was something that I was like, I don't know. I was like, also it's in Fort Worth. I don't go to Fort Worth. You know, I genuinely don't go to Fort Worth. Like Tarrant County is a scary thing to me. Like, but yeah, but I'm happy I made I just said, you know what? It's what have I got to lose? I mean, there are things to lose, but like at some point you have to choose, like, are you going to continue to be unhappy, you know, where you are? And I'm glad I took the chance, because it was worth it. Teach you.